What does it feel like to patients? They complain about pain, aching, and pressure, pressure being a common one. Interestingly enough, a study was published last year in the ENT literature looking at how the sinuses are thickened in people with Graves' disease, wondering whether there's a sinus mucosal antigen that's similar to these. They complain of dryness, they have eyelid edema, bags, tearing, and photophobia. How does it affect their lives? Well, it affects it a lot. They have emotional changes with irritability, there's a high divorce rate, they're isolated, canceled social engagements, they're very self-conscious about their appearance. It's a big deal. As you may know, there's a whole drive in organized medicine in general to have data about how this affects people's lives. I mean, who cares if they have a cataract? Well, we care because it affects their life. Who cares if they have ptosis? We care because it affects their life. This one, certainly, it's easy to show that there's a lot of effect. What does it do to the skin? They get to periorbital edema, skin induration, redness, fat pad thickening around the eyebrows, furrows in the glabella, and the swelling of their cheeks. It's ugly. The eyelids, of course, we get our lid lag that we're all familiar with. We get upper lid retraction with superior scleral show, lower lid retraction, and then resistance to passive lid movement. If you try to push the lid with your finger, which I would highly recommend you do on somebody with Graves' disease, you'll find that it doesn't move very well. In terms of the anterior segment, you're all familiar with this, focal injection over the rectus muscles, chemosis, carunicular erythema and swelling, vessel congestion, corneal staining. And of course, it turns out they have a higher incidence of pinguiculae than the general population. The idea behind that is maybe because their eyes are open so wide, they're getting more ultraviolet radiation. That's what the author said and the people that published that a couple of years ago. Who knows? Extraocular muscles, we mentioned that already. And of course, they have restriction and diplopia. How does it affect the vision? Well, diplopia is one of the big things that we see commonly. It can be both variable or constant. It can happen in primary gaze. It can happen when they look to one side or the other. Sometimes it's only occurring in the morning. Sometimes it's occurring all throughout the day. Other more serious issues are if they have impaired color vision or graying or visual obscurations implying optic neuropathy. Blurry vision can be, of course, caused by a whole bunch of things, as you all know. And, of course, field scotomas are possible, too. You know, one of the things we can get is corneal astigmatism. You can lose blue discrimination. You can have reduced photostress recovery, afropupillary defect. One of the things that's recently been published that's helpful is using frequency doubling perimetry to help diagnose compressive optic neuropathy in the setting of normal visual acuity. So that's something to keep in your back pocket as well. What does it do to the orbit? Well, you get bulging of the eyes, as we're all familiar with. It can be both unilateral or bilateral, and it's the most common cause of both those things. We measure that with exophthalmometry. Also, pushing on the eye with the eye closed with your thumb, doing that to some normal people to get a feeling for what kind of resistance to retropulsion there is helpful, because then you can really feel a difference in people who have Graves' disease, and it'll help you make the diagnosis. And, of course, they can have intraocular pressure elevations in up and down gaze.